This is Trainer Talk, the podcast, brought to you by Sharon Gaskin of the Trainers Training Company and me, Jeanette Tessier, the online course alchemist of Get That Course Online. Over the next hour and a bit, we'll discuss what we've been up to in our businesses and a top-of-mind topic relevant to trainers. We also talk about events to consider, books to read, and a weekly top tip for online course creation. Of course, it wouldn't be Trainer Talk the podcast without the Dog Walking Digest, and every now and again we invite a guest on to share their experience and expertise. You can contact us through Twitter on @TrainerTalkPod, or feel free to email either Sharon or me. So why not sit back with a cuppa, make that journey or chore go a little bit quicker with our weekly inspiration for developing your training business. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Trainer Talk the podcast and we are at episode number 55. And I know, I've been trying to find some exciting things to say about the number 55, and there's actually not an awful lot. It's the 10th Fibonacci number, you know.
Really?
You sound as interested as I am in that one. It is a square pyramidal number. That's not lighting your fire either. No?
Really? No.
Not really. It's one of those where you think, oh, I'm sure there's something nice. There's a load of listings for music that has included the number 55, and I haven't heard of any of them. It used to be the national speed limit in the United States. Funnily enough, when I went to the States a couple of years ago, I went out to a conference for a big online marketer and did a little bit of a road trip beforehand. And I was fully expecting to have to sort of, you know, drive everywhere at 55 miles an hour, because that's what you see in the films and all that kind of stuff. But I was quite pleasantly surprised to see. I mean, they still do have stretches of their highways and interstates that are at 55 for various reasons, but most of the time it's 60 or 70. But it does change quite quickly and quite seemingly randomly as well. It's like 70, 70, 70, 70, 55. Okay. Any reason for that? I can't see a reason for it. There's no houses. There's, you know, So I think we'll move on from that. How was your week, Sharon?
Half a week.
Yes.
Yes. So as we were discussing before we came on this morning, half a week means there'll only be half a podcast.
Ho, ho, ho. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
let's see how we go with talking for half as much time.
Well, let's start off with the disappointing Sporting Saturday.
I think
that has to be referred to in some way. It was very disappointing. I'm not a rugby fan, but I must confess I did watch the semi-final against New Zealand, because it was kind of quite exciting. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, you've got to watch the final, haven't you? Because it's much more, it's a sporting occasion, isn't it?
So, absolutely.
You know, so there we were at 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, and, you know, mugs of tea at the ready and all that kind of stuff, and they're all very excited, and kind of wasn't, was it?
No, it was. I mean, I only saw the second half because I had hockey appointments on Saturday. But the place, the club that I was based at for the two matches that I did on Saturday has a clubhouse. So they'd opened up early and were doing bacon butties and hot dogs and stuff for people, and cups of tea for people that wanted to come and watch the match. So I was driving during the first half. I thought, it's all right, I'll be there for the second half, boys, come on. And within the space of about 10 minutes, it's kind of, yeah, this kind of isn't going the way it's supposed to. Somebody's thrown the script out the window. And we were saying, weren't we, before we started recording this morning, that we both feel that the turning point was the kick that Farrell missed to get us within 3 points.
Absolutely.
But yeah. I think the learning within that is how psychologically something as relatively small as that, because we were still within touching distance, even though the kick was missed. I think the psychological impact of that, I think, really had a difference, made a difference to the way people look at it and the way people think about things. And there's a little bit of messaging around resilience in there as well, because a lot of resilience is about how pragmatic you are about the facts that are in front of you and not allowing your individual sort of feelings about it or emotions about it to cloud whether or not you can see opportunities in front of you. And I'm not saying for a second that these boys don't have psychological support and mental toughness training and all that kind of stuff, but it is still a tough ask when you're on a big world stage like that. You know how many millions of people are watching, and it excuse me, it just feels like it's getting away from you a little bit.
Yeah, and I do feel that. I think, as I mentioned to you before, it's the same, you know, with tennis. Whenever there's a big, somebody has a really big win,
yeah,
you don't expect to have, let's say, you know, they're ranked, I don't know, 50 odd, and they have, you know, they knock out, you know, a top 10 or something like that, then the very next match they nearly always lose.
Yeah,
always, because that actually takes so much out of you mentally, because you're on this huge high and then you have to get yourself back up again. And I think that kind of might have happened you know, with the rugby team, that they must have been on a massive high last Saturday because they were expected to beat New Zealand, and they've had a whole week. And it's kind of, they were probably exhausted from that, and then they've had to pick themselves up again. And it's in a way, it's the danger was that they'd already had their final.
Yes.
And then they, you know, you've got to go through it all over again, and sort of that same feeling. Now I know there's obviously some people listening will say, well, if you can't get yourself up for the final of a World Cup, you shouldn't be a professional sports person. But I don't think it's as simple as that, you know. The mind is a funny thing, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. It really is. And I think we only just have to sort of, you know, look at how easily our day can turn around when we get some positive news, like we've won a proposal, or, you know, somebody's come back and wants to work with us, or we get a random or seemingly random inquiry or something like that. It's amazing how our outlook and attitude and feelings about the day can change so quickly, just from some relatively small things happening. I'm fascinated, totally fascinated by the mental side of all of this, and have been for as long as I can remember, been fascinated by psychology and all those sorts of things. Yes, I think we see it a lot more with sports people, don't we? Because they play out on the world stage, you know, and all of us armchair psychologists looking at it.
We had a bit of a giggle because my trainer is South African.
Okay.
And, so all week we've been having this banter. And then my other trainer is, he's obviously English, but he used to play rugby. So he used to be in the academy at Worcester and everything. And he's so they've been having like loads of banter all week.
I can imagine.
So I had a message to her as soon as the final whistle went, and I said to her, are you on your third glass? I think that was pretty much the case. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'd sort of, you know, obviously I'm disappointed that we were runners-up, but I am also really pleased for the South African team insofar as it's the first time in their history that they've had a black captain, which is just amazing. Really, really cool achievement to see, you know, things sometimes not taking a step forward as quickly as you'd like in terms of harmony in the world and all the rest of it. However, it is still a positive step in the right direction. You've got to sort of feel some sense of, you know, just because we didn't win, it doesn't mean it's not a good thing necessarily.
No, absolutely. But it was, but, you know, you've got to say it was, I think it was disappointing, not so much because the fact that it happened, but it was kind of like the way it happened.
Yes.
I just felt it was just never going to happen. You know, you just have that feeling that you...
Me too, yeah.
About 10 minutes into it, I'm like, it's just not happening today, is it? I don't know what it was, but I just felt it. So there you go. So, and I did say it was a disappointing sport Saturday, because having sort of, you know, had to endure that in the morning, I thought, well, okay, well, that's bad, but it's not too bad, because at least I've got Rafa this afternoon. You know, in the semi-finals of the Paris Masters,
and
watched him on Friday night, and he played amazing. I was like, yeah, this is great. So I sat there at 3:30 with got my laptop on, I'm all ready and everything. And then I was like, oh, why is the commentator talking about something that's just happened and I don't know what it is? And and apparently what had just happened was that Rafa had just withdrawn because he injured himself in the warm-up, for God's sake.
He's just not performing to your expectations, is he?
Oh, he's just so unlucky at this time of year, honestly. So it's every year, and this year he's not having done the China thing. I thought, oh, this would be great. He's going to be in peak condition, you know. But oh no, the curse of injury strikes yet again. So yeah, so that was very disappointing sport Saturday, and topped off by the previous. Was it Saturday morning? Sometime during the week when I received a birthday card from a member of my team, bless him, who shall remain nameless, who obviously sent me a lovely box of chocolates, which was incredibly kind, and a card, which was also incredibly kind, apart from the fact that it had a picture of Roger Federer on the front.
Oh dear, yeah.
So, yes.
Were you not impressed by that, Sharon?
I sent him a message and told him that, what a lovely gesture, and I was, you know, very nice, but frankly, I was appalled by his choice of card, and please don't send me one like that again.
I hope he understood what he'd done and that you were able to, you know, have a laugh and a giggle about it.
Yes, indeed, we did. But yes, it's not, I didn't go, you know, I held it at arm's length. I did not display it anywhere.
Yes, arm's length and put it in the recycling quickly, yeah, as possible. Thank you for the thought, but I'm very grateful, but
yes, so that was that. And what else has happened this week? Well, my online program started last Monday, so that was good. Nice group, all the rest of it, but just feeling that it's needing a little bit of time to gather momentum and having to, and this is, we're going to talk about this, aren't we, in our topic?
We are.
Having to cajole, encourage, nag, to sort of persuade people to get actually more involved in it and do more than just sort of sit, you know, sit and watch the webinars. So that's been interesting. We're starting in Trainer Talk this week. We are starting a challenge called It's Not Who You Know, It's Who Knows You.
Yes.
And I'll be announcing all the details later in a Facebook Live, but obviously this is going out on Friday. So by which time we will have started said challenge. So it's going to be in two parts. And the idea behind it really is that it's all to do with the N-word, really, isn't it?
Certainly is.
So we all know the easiest way of getting business is for other people to tell, to talk about you to others. It's definitely the easiest way to get business. But if people don't know what you do, or if you're doing too many things, so that they're really not clear, that they don't remember you and they're not clear what it is that you do, it's really difficult to get other people to talk about you and tell other people about you.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been thinking about this. In Trainer Talk, there's huge potential for people to get work in this way. And in fact, you know, this has been happening. People have been getting work like that from within the community, telling other people about them. But there are an awful lot of people for who that doesn't happen. And one of the reasons why is that people don't know what they do.
Yeah. You're going to bang on your desk a bit more about
they
that
know
one.
What they do. So the Who Knows Your Challenge is going to be in two parts. The first bit is all about, is the prep work really, is all about, okay, think about this. So what is the one thing that you want to be known for? Yes, there are probably loads of things that you could do, but we don't want to know that. What's the one thing that you want to be known for? And use this week to do your preparation, to have a think about that. If you need to bounce it off other people in the group, use the group to do that. So, you know, this week is going to be, you know, talk, there's going to be lots of talking about niching. Next week, your challenge is, the second part of the challenge is to come on a Facebook Live in the group and tell people about you. So there'll be a series of questions, you know, this will be, who are you? Where do you live? What's the one thing you want to be known for? And why should we tell other people about you? And yeah, and I think that'll be an interesting exercise. It'll certainly force people to think about these things. and gives you an opportunity for other people to learn more about what it is that you do, and also for you to decide what is the one thing that you want to be known for.
It's true. Yeah, absolutely.
How does that sound?
Yeah, it sounds brilliant. Really, really good. I have to see if I can gear myself up to a Facebook Live.
Oh, I know, because you're just so shy at doing things like that.
It's true. I'm very shy and retiring. I'm guessing this challenge probably isn't aimed at me, but I'm going to participate anyway, because it's always it's always good to go through these things anyway, just to sort of, you know, refine and hone and think about it and all the rest of it, because as we know, even though I do have one thing that I want trainers to know me for, which is obviously online course creation, that in itself has little offshoots into other areas of my business as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like e-learning, production and consultation, and then the whole website side of things. But for, as far as the trainer community is concerned, and certainly the trainer talk community is concerned, my first and foremost thing is online course creation. Yeah. So I think having any kind of questions to think about and mull over and consider in the context of your business can only be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And we are coming up to sort of the time of year where we traditionally start reflecting on what we've been doing over the past year, even though in my newsletter last week I made the point there are still 7 solid weeks before the C word.
Absolutely there are, yeah.
Before the bells jingle, before people overindulge. Well, I'm going to overindulge, that's for sure. But there's still, you know, a lot of time to get stuff done. So it's almost 2 months, 7 weeks.
Yeah,
so again, it's all about perspective.
Yeah, despite the fact that I'm already seeing Christmas trees on Facebook.
No!
I mean, hello! November, people.
I know.
What's wrong with them? Anyway.
But in this country, you know what? We'll get Guy Fawkes 5th of November tomorrow. Get that out of the way, and then that'll be it for the full-on Christmasites. The elves will be coming to spread their joy.
Anyway, so that's been, I've been thinking about that, so excited to get that started today. So this, you know, so I'll do Facebook Live a bit later on and some posts in the group, and just at the very least this week, just really, you know, hoping to stimulate debates, discussions, conversations about niching and getting known for one thing. And then next week it's time for you all to put it into practice for doing your Facebook Live. So
exciting.
That'll be good. What else? Bit of a house update, so things are kind of moving sort of slowly. So I think I've reported somebody does want to buy our house, but unfortunately haven't sold their own, or indeed their house wasn't even on the market when they but it is now, and they've got a couple of people wanting to they've had a couple of viewings, and somebody actually does want to buy it because they live next door and they want to buy the house for their mother. So yeah, so it's a little bit kind of, it might be getting to the point where decide what I want to do or not.
Absolutely. Before it's been kind of, there are so many things that have to fall into place before I actually have to make a decision. And now those things are falling into place. So,
yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So literally, you know, my brain has become sort of stuffed full of sort of two things about when I'm not thinking, I'm either thinking about memberships and how to get people into membership, because I think I'm spending so much time immersed in that because I'm part of this Connect membership, that it's just, I'm constantly thinking about it, which I don't think is healthy, or houses. So, so I've either dreaming about memberships or houses. It's very sad.
You know, I think it's understandable that your brain is sort of, you know, trying to sift through all the information and put it into some kind of logical order and how you need to think about these things. Are you going to tell the listeners about your dream?
Oh, yes. So that's I tell that house is on my mind, because the house that we are interested in buying does need a new kitchen. And so obviously kitchens was on my mind a lot. I was dreaming about it. And I had this dream that this kitchen was kind of designed bizarrely without my say-so, and the kitchen designers just went away and installed it, just hoping I would like it. And I kind of liked most of it, but I just said to the guy who did it, I said, can I be brutally honest with you? He said, yes. I said, well, I really don't like these work tops. And he said, well, what? And I said, well, they've got flowers on. And he went, oh, but we made them specially for you.
Oh dear, I wonder if there's any amateur dream analysts out there that want to tell us what that one means. But I don't think I've ever seen worktops with flowers on them.
Me neither. It was very bizarre, that's why I didn't like them.
Oh dear, it is funny how our brains kind of twist these things. I tend not to remember my dreams, but I do know when I do remember them, and I don't keep the memory of them for long, but I do know that when I do remember them when I wake up in the morning, they've been really rather bizarre. And and you know, to the point where I can't place why I would think about certain things in a certain context. And you know, I mean, I understand that it is your brain sort of trying to file information away and put it in the right place for later retrieval and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's like, what? Why was I dreaming that? And the way things change suddenly in your dream. So, or, you know, you could be driving along in a car and then all of a sudden you're walking on top of a wall or something. And it seems the most normal thing in the world. And you kind of, you know, you have the passing thought about, oh, I was in a car and now I'm on top of a wall and that's it. You know, it's really weird, isn't it?
Bizarre. Very, very bizarre. Very bizarre. So that was my half a week. So how's your half a week?
Well, my half a week went very, very quickly because I was sort of chasing my tail effectively for the rest of the week. As I think I probably mentioned in the podcast, just trying to catch up with everything that had happened whilst I was running the boot camp. And kind of got to Friday and putting out my newsletter and all this kind of stuff. And I had deliberately not given myself masses to do on the Thursday and Friday anyway. So I didn't have any big meetings in or anything like that. I had stuff that I wanted to do and get out of the way, but I hadn't sort of planned in anything out of the ordinary, so to speak, to do. And having recorded the podcast on Wednesday and then been doing some stuff on the Wednesday afternoon, I didn't have anything other than the Thursday and Friday last week to get work done. And some of that had to be spent preparing for the hockey stuff at the weekend as well. Plus also, I had to get back to boot camp, to not my boot camp, but my fitness boot camp, the gym boot camp, because I hadn't been for a couple of weeks for various reasons, my boot camp notwithstanding. So that was fun, doing that on Friday morning and finding out that made a difference not having been for a little while. And I know, you know, to your base fitness levels it doesn't, but to in the moment kind of, I should find lifting this weight a little bit easier than this. You know, it's noticeable how quickly that sort of stuff goes away. And then really wasn't looking forward, frankly, to standing by the side of a hockey pitch on Saturday because that weather was just disgusting. And I had watched, as I've mentioned, the second half of the rugby, and I thought, oh dear, I hope this isn't foreboding of how the day is going to be. Got to the side of the pitch and did the necessary. I was coaching one umpire, then back to the clubhouse for the debrief whilst another match was going on. And this is quite usual for Saturdays on hockey pitches or hockey venues, is you have sort of game after game after game after game, and they can start anytime from 10 to 11:30 as it happened. This one started and then there was another match at 1:30 and then I was back for the next one at 3 and then there was another match after that as well. So it just, your day goes really, really quickly. Luckily I wasn't standing out in the elements when the really big squall went through. Wowee, that was pretty miserable weather. And I normally feel like I kind of get away with it during the hockey season. There have been times when, you know, I've been absolutely drenched or whatever, but most of the time it's kind of just not too bad. But this season, for whatever reason, I feel like I've been out and exposed to the elements way more than... And it's only November, like the beginning of November. It's ridiculous. So I'm hoping for the weather to sort itself out, frankly, for the rest of the season. Because I don't mind, you know, when it's cold, but if it's wet and windy as well, yeah, it kind of, it gets pretty miserable. And I haven't even got the excuse of running up and down with a whistle, because what I'm doing is watching other people run up and down with a whistle officially. So it's so that was that. And then Sunday, yesterday was a bit of a blur, actually. I had big plans for all sorts of stuff that I wanted to do. And I had to write up the reports, obviously, for the umpires that I'd seen on the Saturday. And then I was planning to get some website stuff done and maybe do a little bit of filming for various things that I've got coming up, and that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, I had had a call, an impromptu Zoom session with Kate and with Emma. So two of our other lovely ambassadors, Kate Young and Emma Williams, which was great from the point of view of being able to solve an issue, help Kate, as it was on this occasion. Could have easily been any one of the three of us, but just sort of, you know, sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees, and you just need to say to somebody, and that's the beauty of the ambassadors group, and indeed the Trainer Talk group at large, actually, is sometimes you can just put a post and go, okay, I can't see the wood for the trees. This is the situation. What do you think? And then people come back, go, well, da 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 da, and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, that's what I should be doing. So that was lovely. But by the time that had done, it was time for Strictly, the results show, and I was cooking my chili as well. And then it's kind of, oh well, that'll be me then for the rest of the day. And then I woke up this morning thinking, right, I've got to go to boot camp. There's, God, it feels like the podcast has come around again really quickly. And of course it has, because it was only last Wednesday that we were recording it. So it's like, yeah, only half a week, but it kind of, it feels like it's gone even quicker than that. So I'm hoping that this week will feel slightly more leisurely, because there's a lot that I want to get done. And yeah, I'm at the beginning of the month, I'm always in this sort of bizarre situation where I have to remind myself that it is only the beginning of the month, and therefore I've got more time than I think I do, but I don't have as much time as I think I do. That probably won't make any sense at all, but I know that by the time we come to get to the podcast, to record the podcast next week, if I don't feel like I've achieved enough to set me up for the rest of the month, then it's going to be, okay, now I'm feeling a bit panicked. So it's a big week, but I'm hoping that that it will proceed at a more reasonable pace, so I do actually have time to get everything done.
Good stuff.
There we are.
So that was our half week.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, very bizarre. So, all right. So,
top of mind?
We're going to talk about engagement, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Or lack of engagement.
Or lack thereof, yeah. Well, go on.
No, I think this is a problem for trainers in different environments. So I think we've all experienced, I certainly did, when I was in the training room, my fair share of people who I used to call them cardboard cutouts.
they
didn't want to be there. They'd been set by the managers and they were just absolutely determined not to engage or participate or say anything positive. And those people can be really hard work. I think certainly, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you know, when you're running webinars.
Mm-hmm.
Know when people are not, are they there, are they not, are they saying anything, are they, you know, doing something else while they're listening to you, are they paying attention, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, in a community, you know, if you're listening to this and you do run communities, you know, like I do, you know, getting people to engage in communities can be difficult.
Yeah, it's true.
So I just thought we'd sort of talk about that and sort of, well, first of all, you had an idea, didn't you, about what do we define as engagement?
Yeah, it's just, it occurs to me that there are a lot more things vying for our attention these days. So let's sort of put to one side for the moment engagement in the classroom, because I think that is something that is worthy of a whole discussion on its own. But when we talk about online communities, or we talk about webinars or Facebook Lives or whatever it might be, I do think that our understanding of what equals engagement probably needs a little bit of adjustment, because my point was that you and I have both experienced, and therefore other people must have experienced, somebody effectively contacting us for what feels like to us out of the blue, but to them, they've either been listening to us on the podcast or they've been following our Facebook or LinkedIn posts or other social media, all of those different sorts of things. So to them, they have been engaged with us for quite some time. It's just that we're not aware of it. So yes. It feels to us like they're not engaged, but to them, their perception is that they have been engaged.
Yes.
So I think perhaps we need to redefine what engagement means to include or incorporate these people that do lurk, frankly, and aren't posting in the groups or aren't responding to messages or aren't replying to newsletters or anything like that. And you can get some statistics. So, for example, we both use ActiveCampaign for our email newsletters, so we can see, you know, responses and percentages and who's opened what and all the rest of it. So you can see who's interacting in a way, but does that feel like engagement? Well, it doesn't, because we're still looking at engagement as being a conversation. And I think that's where we perhaps need to adjust what engagement is in those contexts. In the training room, in the classroom, I think it's a totally different thing. I do think we have the right sort of definition for engagement. Maybe we should talk about webinars, online training and communities first, and then come on to engagement in the classroom, maybe.
Yeah, so I mean, I've run tons of webinars over the years, and I'm sure, you know, you have as well. And I guess this is something that you teach in your courses about how to run effective online programs. So, you know, what are the reasons why people don't engage on webinars, do you think?
So we need to make the distinction between a live virtual classroom like a webinar and pre-recorded online courses, because I do think there are different methods that you would employ for both. And we've been fortunate enough, haven't we, at Trainer Talk Live to have Jo Cook come and deliver a session on delivering engaging live webinars, live classrooms, and that kind of thing. And it is about making sure that you are including people in what you're doing and asking them questions and giving them the opportunity and the comfort and safe environment to respond. So part of the training for people I know around delivering live webinars is to spend a bit of time helping people understand where the chat box is, where the question and answer bit is, how they go about doing that and making them feel comfortable to do that. So you will see a lot of very accomplished webinar trainers, runners, people who deliver webinars, they will spend the first 5 minutes prior to the official start time being online and asking people where they've come from and getting them to type it in the chat box so that they get into the habit of responding, so that when there is a question to ask or a way to get them engaged. And what they're doing is building people, if it's a free webinar, they're building people up to the point where they're feeling so connected with what's going on, they are in the right frame of mind to buy whatever the thing is that's being pitched at the end of the webinar. You know, that's the purpose of it. But the same techniques, even if you're not pitching something, it's the same technique. You want people to feel like they are engaged in a conversation rather than a seminar or a lecture. And it is the same principle that you would take through to a pre-record online course. You're not delivering a lecture, you're not delivering a seminar, although it feels that way because you're talking effectively to nobody. You're talking to a webcam or a video camera or whatever, but you have to deliver it in a way that it feels like a conversation with just one person, which is why I spend so much time talking to people about who is your ideal audience, who's the person that you are creating this online course for. You know, have a really clear picture of them in your mind, so that when you are talking to camera and delivering your information, you're having a conversation with that person and you're asking them to really think. And funnily enough, this links very nicely with the top tip that I'm going to be delivering at the end of the podcast today. So in order to make things engaging, it is about creating the environment where it is easy and natural and safe for people to engage with you. Have you got anything else that you'd add to that?
Just when you were saying about sort of talking to camera, or sort of, because I think we've all, you know, experienced times when we've been on a webinar or we've been on a Facebook Live or whatever, and you feel you're not sure whether you're actually just talking to anybody at all. Anybody out there?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a weird feeling, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Find that? Is it, do you find that as something that you just have to get over, or is there a specific technique that you can learn to kind of help you with that?
Practice. it's absolutely about practice. It doesn't feel weird anymore, but that's because I've recorded so many online courses, pre-recorded online courses, that I'm very used to effectively talking to myself, just talking to the camera. So I have been able to develop my style, which is quite sort of chatty conversational. And this is not just me saying it, this is feedback that I've had. Is that even though I am effectively talking to no one, I can still do it in a way that it feels like I'm having a conversation with the person who eventually ends up listening to it. But that absolutely has come from practice. One of my first webinars that I did 3, 4, 5 years ago was delivered to nobody because the technology cocked up. I suspect it was me that cocked it up. But anyway, so people were in one effectively webinar room waiting for me to start, and I was actually delivering to another webinar room, so there was nobody there, and that was really bizarre. But I am also the sort of person who, if I'm in the middle of something like that, I'm a bit of a show must go on type mentality. So it's like, well, I'm just going to carry on anyway, because if nothing else, I'm getting practice at saying this stuff in this order and getting my brain into thinking about all of this stuff. And that for me is how I stimulate my thoughts and ideas, is by talking, as we may have noticed from the podcast. I think out loud occasionally. So for me, it works, but it is something that I think you need practice in. I would defy anybody to go on camera the first time in a live and have the feeling that nobody's actually watching them and still maintain sort of enthusiasm and a conversational style with it. It's something
you just have to get your head around. I mean, even on one of our because you know, in my Connect membership with Stu McLaren, he was doing he's had this problem all week where, and I think I've noticed a few people on Facebook where you're doing a live and the comments are not showing up. There must have been some gremlin this week on Facebook, and every time, and he was getting really, you could see that it was, you know, they didn't like it. He kept going, I can't see the comments, but you must be out there, kind of, are you out there? Oh, this is really weird. And you could see that even somebody as experienced as him was kind of getting a little bit flustered, you know, because it is a weird feeling when you feel you're just talking to the, and you're not sure whether there's anybody there or not. It's weird.
It is definitely. And I can kind of understand that, because I would imagine as well that what was also going through his head is am I actually broadcasting? So, you know, sometimes when you're listening to the radio.
Yeah, I have that all the time, yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, and people are kind of going, am I actually broadcasting here, or is something going wrong? Am I literally just talking to myself, or am I creating something that people can at least listen to?
I go, I'm doing a live, and then I'm like, this, and I'm page, I'm not on my personal profile, am I?
I've done that.
And it goes through my door. Well, sometimes I'll be doing a webinar and then I'll go, I know I pressed record. I did press record. That thought goes through your mind, and then you're kind of looking to see, is that little red thing? Oh, yeah. And while you're thinking that, you can feel that you're starting to get distracted. But until you reassure yourself that you are recording, it's almost like you can, weird how we can be thinking, how we can be talking, thinking these other things as well. You know, they kind of throw us.
completely. And sometimes we get away with it, and sometimes I've watched myself back on a replay sometimes, and I remember what I was thinking at the moment I was saying something. And sometimes it's like, oh no, I got away with that. And then other times it's like, no, I can totally see that I'm not concentrating on what I'm supposed to be saying at that point. Which is normally for me, if it's a pre-record from an online course, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna have to re-record that, because like sometimes I'll start speaking and then my brain will go, nope, you're on your own to finish that sentence, and I'm just there going, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be saying. And I would just say practice on that one for sure. But I mean, with any live, with any webinar, with any situation where you're not actually in front of somebody, I mean, we'll talk about communities in a moment, right? So for the instance instances where you are broadcasting and relying on the technology to hopefully let you know that people are watching, the tricks and techniques that you would use in order to get people to engage is to ask questions. And, and you know, if people don't answer those questions, don't get annoyed with them. I have seen some people, not from the Trainer Talk community, but I have seen some people deliver webinars where people haven't answered the questions and they've got really annoyed with them. It's like, seriously, if you want me to buy something from you, that's not going to happen. So that's the lives and what have you. Then there's the community group. So I know a few of our number in Trainer Talk run their own Facebook groups for their various niches, N-word. And getting people to engage in that. I mean, you've got one of the most active, I would say. But even at times, I think you sort of worry that people aren't engaging enough. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just... And it's not just my community. I think it is that it's a problem for people who do have membership, groups or communities. In my Connect membership, this is people are constantly bringing up questions about, I've got this community and nobody's engaging. I've got this group, or I run these live sessions and either people don't turn up, or when they do turn up, they don't say anything, And so, and I'm here to answer your questions, but nobody's got any. So what do I do? So it is an ongoing problem, I think. And I think it does go back to, what you said about what do we class as engagement. I can, in the Facebook group, because it's below a certain number, I can actually see who's seen posts, which is tremendously helpful, because you think, they haven't commented or liked or whatever, but I can see that they've at least seen it. So that's good. And I think with my community, I think, I just have to keep showing up. I have to keep coming up with a variety of sort of different, different content, different things to keep people engaged. Certainly have to put things out in a variety of mediums. And we've talked about this before. It's not just all about the Facebook group. It's about, sending people emails. It's, posting events in the group, posting conversations, all that sort of thing. It's having a variety of things that people can tap into.
Same message, different medium. Definitely. Which is why, it's the same for my online course Alchemy group, which is the group Facebook group that I run for people who are or have been clients of mine for Get That Course Online. So it's just somewhere where they can ask specific questions about online course creation, tag me for an answer about something, share their musings, all that kind of stuff. It's fine, and it's not got massive engagement, but the engagement that it does have is quite focused and targeted and useful. So every Friday, it used to be every 2 weeks, was it every month at one point? Anyway, it is now every Friday. I go live, and it used to be an Ask Me Anything only session. So any questions that come up in the group during the week, or any questions that came up on the day I was doing on Friday morning, I would answer those questions live. Having already commented with the response, I would go into more detail. But as people are moving through the process, we're not getting that many questions, and certainly not enough for me to have that as the only thing I'm talking about on a weekly basis. So what I also do is I cover off the top tip training as well. So I will, on Tuesday, on my Facebook page, I will put out a written post about the top tip. In my newsletter, I will talk about a top tip. In the AMA and top tip training, I will talk about the top tip. There's a sort of bit of crossover. And of course, again, I talk about it on the podcast as well. So I have this sort of rolling program of what I'm talking about over a fortnightly basis. But very often, and a lot of the time, because I'm quite rubbish at sort of reminding people that it's happening, but very often I'm talking to myself on that, or somebody will join me halfway through, and they're very good at saying hello. But I do know that people watch it back, and sometimes we'll watch it back with a month gap, and then all of a sudden I'll get this notification from Facebook saying that somebody's commented on my video. I'm assuming it's the latest one, and it's not. It's one from 2 or 3 weeks ago, which is fine. People get around to these things. And I think consistency, and we've mentioned this before, but
there you go.
You see,
my next point.
It is. It's about consistency, isn't it? Oh, hello, Jem. We haven't heard you for a while, lovely. But it is about being consistent so that people get that sense of you're being reliable for them, you're being dependable for them, so that when they are in the right headspace to respond, to engage in the way that we would traditionally think of engagement as being, you're there for them. It's not a question of I've missed it, therefore I can't do it. It's if you're always there at a set time every week doing something, so like your Trainer Talk Insiders for example, most of the time I can make them, some of the time I can't, but it's reassuring to know that you are always there at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. Invariably I'm at my desk working on something, although it's because it's that weird time of year for dog walks and that kind of thing. At the moment I'm probably more likely to be out walking Scamp, but that'll only be that way for a few weeks, and then it'll be back, oh, I'll get the notification, Sharon's gone live, it's like, oh yes, of course, it's Tuesday at 5 o'clock, I'll click on that and see who's won the Big Girl Pants Award, amongst other very important awards as well, obviously. This idea of everybody needing to respond to every post, or to chip in with every post, or to respond to every time you go live, or being within the community. I do think that being part of a community is different to how we used to think of it. And when Facebook was smaller, when the online space was smaller, when fewer people had communities, I think you would get a higher level of what I call traditional engagement. But now, because there are so many things that are vying for people's attention, I mean, I dread to think how many Facebook groups I personally belong to. Some of them I've joined as a bit of a competitor analysis snooping type thing. Some of them I've joined because I'm genuinely interested in what they've got to say. Some of them I'm in because they're target market for me, and I want to be on hand to be able to answer questions and increase my know, like, and trust. And then some of them are for completely random hobby stuff as well, and Strictly Come Dancing, which is an interesting place to be on a Saturday night, I can tell you. Some of the posts on a Sunday. Anyway, there's so much stuff vying for our attention that I think it's possibly a little bit naive of us to expect that engagement is going to equal people posting and answering questions and being in the, visibly to us being in there all the time. Yeah. That really was my point about the redefinition.
I think it's about... and this is why I do these things within Facebook.
Oh, hello.
Oh my God, I don't believe it.
Is it Rafa trying to call you to apologise for pulling out?
So what was I talking about? Yeah, so it's important. That's why I have these things within Trainer Talk on a regular basis, as you say, sort of Trainer Talk Inside on a Tuesday, Marketing Monday on a Monday. Our regular, our monthly online events, the newsletter that goes out on Sunday night. It's just so that people can feel connected to each other, even though they're not necessarily showing up for everything. They know that it's there, and through that they can feel connected.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I think engagement for our own communities is that feeling of connection. Engagement for us is when we can visibly see or hear them responding, and that disconnect is what creates this sense that there isn't a sense of engagement. Okay, so let's come to the thing where we are actually physically in a room with people and trying to get them to engage. Oh, well, as soon as you said, those people that turn up or they're there because their line manager has forced them to. I had in one of the very last face-to-face courses that I delivered that wasn't anything to do with online training, I had one like that. And oh my God, he was hard work. Good grief. And, I had to say to them in the end, I'm on the point of asking him to leave. Because he's just being such a disruptive influence. I'm getting all the other delegates coming up to me saying, I don't want to be in a group with him when we were doing little bits of group work and all that kind of stuff. And it was training that was spread over several weeks. So I'd see them 1 week and then I'd leave them for a couple of weeks and then see them again. And I tried every blooming technique in the book to try and get this guy to engage, but he didn't want to be there. He didn't believe in the power of any kind of training. He just wanted to get on with his job and have a jolly good moan about the people he was working with. And that was his state. And he had convinced himself he was in a position where he couldn't move jobs because of all his other responsibilities. And that was it. This was just the way the world was. And he was almost quite happy to have those bars around him and moan about it. And that's what he wanted to do. But it's just so draining when you get something like that in the classroom, isn't it?
Draining, and you go from you see it as a challenge initially.
Yep.
And then when all the techniques that you're trying don't actually work, then you can start to get annoyed, and you can start to lose your confidence and just start not to enjoy it, which is a shame really, because quite often you might have 10 people in the room and 9 of them are really engaged and having really time, and your delivery and everything, the experience is really hitting the mark, and there's this one person who just occupies all your attention, and it's really hard. I must tell you a story about this happened to me years ago when I didn't have one person like that. I did have a room full of 10 people, 12 like that, and basically they were all from the same department, which is the claims department. And there was a lot of, change within the organisation, and a lot of people didn't agree with it. So this whole thing was just hijacked by people's moans and complaints. And everything I tried to do was, oh, well, that's not going to work. And it was just, and it got to about 11 o'clock, and I just thought, I've had enough of this. Mm. So it was just literally like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
So I just literally, I said to everybody, okay, all right, just let's take a coffee break, whatever. Okay, I went upstairs and I walked into the office of the claims manager or director or whatever he was. And I said, I've got a room full of people downstairs and I'm trying to, they're on a course and all they're doing is moaning and complaining about the things that aren't right within your department and the organisation. So how about coming down with me now and you can sit there and you can answer all their questions? And he's like, yeah, okay, no problems. Great. He comes down, sits in the chair. None of them said a word.
No. Oh, for goodness sake. Well, that... Oh.
I'm like, here he is. This is your opportunity. Now, you just say what you just told me.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get all these issues sorted, because unless we do, we're not going to be able to move forward with the rest of the day. And they just sat there, even more like cardboard cutouts, because they didn't want to... And I was like, well, I've tried everything now.
Yeah.
And then he left and then he went back to bed.
Oh, for goodness sake. Well, that's just ridiculous. That's just people that don't want to, grow up and be an adult.
Yeah, I know. That is one strategy that you can use, that sort of, instead of trying to sweep it under the carpet, just actually confront it. And go, sometimes you have to do that, take delegates to one side and go, I know it's your stuff for whatever reason. You're bringing it into the training room. Choices. You can, go back to work, or you can come in here and participate.
Yeah.
We can't get on like this, can we?
And I've done a similar thing back when I was working for the RNLI, and one of the lifeguard managers asked me to train his team on report writing, which was one of the things that I trained. So I did a bespoke session for him. But it became pretty obvious within the space of half an hour that he wasn't happy with what they were giving him, but he hadn't given them any instruction for what he wanted. So I struck a deal with them in the end. I said, look, if I promise to bring him in the room at the end of the day for half an hour, so I will work it out so that we finish half an hour early, I'll bring him in, sit him down, and you can say all of this stuff to him. Let's work through the rest of the course and, make a reasonable assumption on what it is that's going to be the best way of reporting this information. And I got their sort of, agreement to move forward. And that's how we move forward. And I pre-warned him. I said, look, this is what's happened. I'd seen him at lunchtime. And this is what I've agreed with them. Can you come in at this time and be prepared? I said, they're not going to have a go at you. I think they just want some clarity from you, but they need to express that to you themselves. And it worked really well, actually. They were a little bit shy to begin with, because it's like, oh, I've got permission to tell my manager he's not doing something properly. And it was kind of, well, yes, but do it in the way that we talked about, constructively and positively and all the rest of it. And that worked really quite well. But there are other times where I've had to take people out of the room and just, luckily I wasn't lead facilitator. I was supporting, so I was able to do that. That was effectively my role, because we had lots of different people coming into the room from different backgrounds and with different moans and groans and what have you. But this one person, they just, it was like they couldn't think any further than the thing that they had a problem with. So I just took them to one side and sat them down, took them out of the room for 3/4 of an hour, had a cup of tea with them and said, okay, come on, tell me all of it. And then we'll see what we can do about it. And as soon as that had happened, they were able to then carry on and contribute, which was great. Really, really good. But I learned, again, from the RNLI, I learned very, very quickly that if I was out and about on the coast, if I was doing any kind of focus groups or anything like that, I had to give over the first half hour of the conversation to get all the moans and groans out of the way. And then pussycats for whatever I wanted to talk about. But they had to have that first half an hour to moan.
Yeah, to get it out of the system, yeah. I mean, one of the things that you can do to boost learner engagement on training courses is, of course, to use GiraffePad.
Nice.
GiraffePad, for those of you who don't know, is a piece of software that does some really cool things around boosting learner engagement. And certainly check that out. Jeanette will put the link in the show notes. And also at Trainer Talk Live on the 6th of December, Mark Williams, who's also one of our Trainers for Local Leaders, he's going to be running a session around boosting learner engagement, which really interesting. And he talk about GiraffePad, but other things as well that you can do when you're faced with that situation of people who just won't do anything because we all have the sinking feeling and it's just not very nice.
Yeah, completely. I used GiraffePad for the online course creation bootcamp. And it works really well for that, because it means I can put loads of files and resources in one place and not having to email them around to everybody. There's the chat function, the messaging function in there, which can be group messaging or private messaging. So there's a lot going for it to sort of, you know, get people in the mood for the training before the training starts, and then also to follow up on specific things afterwards as well. And of course, depending on what the length of the training course is and how often you're going back, that kind of thing during as well. But yes, good call on that one. What else have we got?
No, I think that's it. Okay. We're done talking about engagement.
Okay. All right. We're all engaged out. Fair enough. So on to the dog walking digest then.
Dog walking digest, had a bit of a tough time last night with Jem. She just seems to be, I know it was the fireworks, but I'm not sure whether it was the fireworks. Yeah. She can hear them, but she just seems to be getting increasingly anxious and confused and all that. So last night I was talking to you about this, wasn't I, before came on. So I ended up in bed at 2 o'clock last night because she just wouldn't settle down. She was jumping on top of me, jumping on top of the sofa, pacing up and down, panting. And then, you know, when I went upstairs to bed, she followed me, which normally she doesn't because she loud upstairs, and so I had to leave her in the end. She wouldn't go back downstairs and was pacing up and down, and you know, in the end I woke up this morning with her by my bed on the floor. She'd obviously exhausted herself and finally gone to sleep, but now is exhausted now. Well, I'm going to take her to the vet tonight because I need to see what's going on, really. And she's getting more she's never really liked dogs. No, she's okay. If dogs run up to her, she doesn't like it. Never liked that, because she had an instant when she was a puppy, which kind of put her off. But just recently now, she just doesn't seem to like dogs full stop. You know, she just seems to be more fearful. Just more fearful. We have to, like, put her on the lead all the time. And so even some people she doesn't seem to like.
Oh, dear.
Growling. And I don't know. She just, obviously, I think it's all anxiety. Now, whether it's because it is a just natural sort of getting old, or whether because the hearing, or I mean the eyesight, I mean I don't even know what she can and can't see, really. Who knows? But I can take her to bed tonight, which will make her even more anxious.
Well, but you need them to have a bit of an MOT for her, just in case, you know, there is anything that that can be done.
Yes.
To just make her more comfortable more than anything else. And, you know, less anxious, because it must be very, whatever it is that's going on for her, it must be very scary. And especially when you are a creature that can't articulate what it is that's wrong with you. Now, you know, even dogs and well, even cats, I suppose, and other animals, if they've hurt their paw or something, they can kind of hold it up. And
or it's like, yeah,
exactly. And I've hurt my paw. Okay, fine, we can deal with that. But when it's something, particularly if it's a dementia-related or, you know, mental impairment, or if she's just scared because she's losing her hearing and her sight, and therefore the only other senses available to her are her smell, sense of smell, which obviously is quite heightened in dogs anyway, then it must be quite a scary place for her. So, you know.
Yeah. So we'll see. I shall report back next week. So.
Yeah, poor thing. Oh, dear. Well, I mean, it's that time of year for fireworks, isn't it?
Not helping either.
Really doesn't help, and Scamp, as usual, is just not a happy bunny. He's not a bunny at all, he's a dog. But he really, really doesn't like the fireworks, and what doesn't help is when you've got the brain deads who insist on letting them off before it's properly dark.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get the dog round. You know, I mean, I cannot physically walk him at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's just ridiculous. To you know, I mean, it's not quite that dark later on yet, but he needs a walk around sort of 4, 5, 6-ish. Now I appreciate when it is very close to November the 5th, if I choose to take him out at a time when it's dark, then the chances are he's going to hear some fireworks, and that's my fault for not being a good owner for taking him out. However, if I take him out and the timing is such that we will get back before it's properly dark, so it's only just very dusky and people are still letting fireworks off, it's just like, oh, come on. You know, just have a heart. But as we know, there are just people who don't think about things like that. And I mean, what's been really pleasing is the fact that Sainsbury's decided to stop selling fireworks. Really pleased.
That's really good.
You know,
noise, actually, you can still, because it's all about just watching them, you don't need to have these events, because the ones that went off last night, it was 10 o'clock here last night, and they're literally, well, there was some around 6 or 7, and then there was another lot about 10, and there were just these real loud banger things, I'm sure. I mean, as I say, I know Jen didn't seem to react to them, whereas 2 years ago she would have done because of the hearing, and that was, you know, that would set her off. But whether there was some kind of trigger last night that she was kind of aware that they were there, I don't know. Whether, who knows, but yeah, she was certainly very
restless,
anxious, and restless.
And you know, it is what it is. And somebody was saying, I should try, I think it's New Calm or Natural Calm or something.
Yeah,
all those sorts of things. It's like, yeah, okay, but to a certain extent, and this is the thing for me, is that he has got better with other loud bangs and loud noises. And even last night, even though there were, I mean, we were the furthest away from getting back home when the bangs started. So I had to put him on the lead, and I was very definitely walked back home, led very firmly, the quickest route to get back home. But his tail wasn't completely down until we were walking along the road and really only a couple of hundred yards from home, and then somebody relatively close, just one firework. And it's just like, if you're gonna have a display, have a display, but don't just let off one random firework. It's just ridiculous. You know, and of course that set him off, but he is getting better, so I would rather not drug my dog if I can help it. But the alternative is for him to be distressed and panting and all the rest of it, and you know, you can't win. It's one of those where you just have to ride it out at this time of year, and then we get a little bit of respite, and then you've got all the New Year's rubbish as well. And then hopefully things go back to relatively normal. Ish, kinda. Anyway.
Moving on to
Hello. whacking your book against your microphone there.
So Train of Thought Locals. We've got Cambridge coming up on 15th of November with the lovely Emma Williams, and then the final one of the year is our one in Ireland. So Galway on the 13th of December with the lovely Anne Walsh, and obviously Train of Thought Live on the 6th of December.
Yeah, excellent. And that's not very far away now either, is it?
I know.
Woohoo!
So 3 or 4 weeks. So, 4 weeks, I think. So.
Excellent.
Yes. So, last thing of the day, Jeanette, your
top tip. Indeed. All right. So this week we are talking about, it is best practice top tip number 30. And it's something, it's not restricted to online course creation, but it is worth remembering that you can do this in online course creation as well, which is asking open-ended questions of your learners to help them get into that sort of deeper thinking phase of learning, because it's the easiest thing in the world. And this is part of the reason I think why online training has got such a poor reputation in some places, is because people think that it's just them talking to camera and delivering the information, and then that's it, I have delivered training. It's like, no, nothing could be further from the truth. You might as well give somebody a book for that. But even within a, you know, really decent books, whether they're self-development, business development, or fiction, will prompt you to have this deeper level of thinking. And it's exactly the same with your online courses. What you want to do is ask questions to provoke that kind of thinking. Ask people things like, you know, what are other ways that we could get to the same outcome? So you don't want to be asking them the monosyllabic answer one. So yes, no, or even maybe sometimes for some of these, or even it depends, which is personally one of my favourite answers, obviously, to questions. But what you're trying to do is to prompt people to have some original thought around the concept that you are explaining to them. And I would defy anybody to say that they can't do that, that they can't include at some point in their video or in a text or in the text that they can attach their course documentation, anything like that, to give people a challenge to sort of go away and think about stuff. Because one of the things that is leveled it on at online courses is that they are can't be experiential for people, which I would counter, actually. They can be, it's just you're not present for that happening and you can't force people to do it, but you can still give them the environment and the instruction and the know-how to go away and try something, to go away to do that experiment and to have that experiential experience. And it's the same with asking questions. It's not just about delivering information. You might, for example, choose to employ a technique which is asking a question at the beginning of a lesson or a section and then not delivering your answer until the end of it. So that's, you know, a learning loop of sorts in there. But you've put the question out there and asked people to think about it. And then as you move through the various elements and steps that they need to learn, keep saying to them, so how do you feel about that question now? Has that changed your thinking at all? Are you thinking about it in a different way? To just give people that anchor, I guess, to think about things as they're moving along, instead of just passively sitting there and having information read out to them, which is what the really poor online courses will do. So you're trying to get people into a state of creative thinking about something rather than just passively absorbing the information. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Makes total
Yay.
Sense.
So yeah. So that's that then. I think
that's us done.
I think, you know, I think we are almost exactly the same timings as we were last week. So yeah, so much for half a podcast, eh? We knew that wasn't going to happen. Come on.
We did.
And it is, I mean, you know, theoretically, it is only one section that would be half as long as the section previously. And I think even that just wasn't even half as long as it is normally. So, you know what? You get the same sort of amount of time from us, lovely listeners. So thank you, as always, for your time and your patience in listening to us. And as usual, you can get in touch with us, although having redefined engagement, of course, there's no obligation for you to get in touch with us at all. But we would like it if you did. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please do get in touch with us and let us know what you think about it. And you can reach us on Twitter at Trainer Talk Pod. You can reach us on a myriad of Facebook groups and pages and on LinkedIn and what have you. And of course, you can always email Sharon at thetrainerstrainingcompany.co.uk, or me, Jeanette, GT at getthatcourseonline.com. There we are. That's it for another week.
Another week.
Another week, another podcast. We will indeed. Take care, everybody. Bye.